Thank you, Denise. I'm still kind of moving around the room to that last musical piece. That was from the rock opera, Seattle 1919, composer Rob Rosenthal. We will talk with Rob in just a minute, and I want to set the stage just very briefly. This is 2019, the centenary year, the 100th anniversary of a whole bunch of events in history significant to North America and to the Pacific Northwest. Seattle General Strike, 1919. That's being celebrated this week up in Seattle. That's why we're focusing on it, culminating in a bus tour of the various sites of the event on this Saturday. Anybody who wants to go up there. The Winnipeg General Strike, 1919. Those are events we celebrate. There are events that we will mourn in the course of the year. The attack on the IWW headquarters in Centralia, Washington, again, Pacific Northwest, we know as the Centralia Massacre. The raids all across the country and the expulsions from the country of radicals of various sorts, foreign-born. The Palmer raids that destroyed archives, destroyed organizations. And there are events that we will puzzle over, like the Boston police strike, also 1919, strike by police in Boston that set back public sector organizing for many, many decades. That's the context. Rob Rosenthal, welcome back to the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Thanks, Norm. It's great to be here.
I'm going to let you set the stage talking about Seattle. It's quite common, of course, for people to turn their university theses into popular musical pieces. I'm sure the opera halls, the repertoire are full of such examples. You clearly found something very important in the Seattle General Strike and something you wanted to communicate in a more popular form, some message you wanted to reach out. Tell, what was significant for you in Seattle General Strike, and what did you try to communicate about it in choosing a rock opera?
Well, I was very interested in the strike because, there are probably less than 10 general strikes in U.S. history, and the only one that moved beyond just striking to actually taking control of a city, that is establishing in the real world that workers' control was viable, was the Seattle General Strike. So I just thought it was an amazing strike. Partly I just thought it's the spirit of the strike, the defiance and the boldness of it really matched what I love most about rock and roll. But also I thought that this is a history that no one knew about. When I talk to people, even people in Seattle, most people have never heard of it. It is arguably the most radical event in U.S. history, and still no one had heard about it. So along with my writing partner, Mike Rawson, we thought we ought to do something that would introduce this to people who might otherwise not have heard about it. So that's what we attempted to do with the opera.
And did very well, yes. We will play some more of the opera very shortly, but I want to still focus a bit on the general strike itself. Quite an extraordinary event, as you say. It was pretty much uniform. All the unions, all the workplaces in Seattle, of course, was heavily unionized. More than 100 different unions. Each one of them voted, and each one of them, every single union, voted to support the general strike. How do you account for what about Seattle at that time?
Yeah. Well, I think there were a couple of things. First, there were radical groups like the Wobblies, the IWW, which had been a constant presence for the last couple of years before the strike, and who had been talking about this idea of the general strike. Really, the general strike comes from the IWW, and people had not, I think, thought it was imminent, but it was something that most working people had heard about from various radicals. But the AFL itself in Seattle was probably the most progressive AFL in the country, and they had been an early advocate of industrial unionism instead of craft unionism, and there were all sorts of radical currents feeding into the labor movement within it and also pushing from the outside. So when the moment came that it was clear that the shipyard workers who were, you know, during World War I, Seattle had exploded with shipyard workers for the war effort. I think a quarter of the ships that were built for the war effort were built in Seattle. And so you had this greatly expanded labor movement and greatly expanded number of especially shipyard workers. And they had been promised this raise after the war, which they were then denied. And most unions, I think, could see already that there was going to be a rollback or an attempted rollback by employers after the war was over. And I think just a lot of unions could see very clearly that if the shipyard workers went down, everyone was going down. And so it was a fantastic show of solidarity, but it was also, as these things are and should be, with a sense of self-interest, that if the employers could beat the shipyard workers, they could beat everyone. And so, as you said, there was this incredible sign of solidarity in which every union in the city voted to go out on general strike, which none of them had done before, this very radical event, and the papers were going crazy and the politicians are going crazy, but nonetheless, they all voted to do it.
It's worth pointing out, of course, that the Japanese workers were organized in unions. They were not invited to join the general strike, but they did so anyway. They did so in solidarity. And the city continued to function. One of the most extraordinary aspects of the Seattle general strike is that workers simply took it over and ran the city and showed that they could run the city. That's, I think this is part of what you meant by saying this was a really radical episode in U.S. history.
Yeah, that's the amazing part of it. The most amazing part of it.
I think so, too. One thing to really point out, this is 1919. We're coming out of World War I. There's a vast sense of possibility that not only could the world be very, very different, but that the ruling authorities had failed. They had led us into war. And so there's both this sense that the world could be very different from what it is, and there's a need on the part of authorities to reestablish their authority, to reestablish their vision of order. And that's why we get both these outbreaks that I mentioned, like the Seattle general strike, and the crackdowns that follow.
Right, and it's going on all over the world. I mean, it's in the United States, it's in Canada, but right, the aftermath of World War I, there's just people all over the world are thinking, that system didn't work for us. I mean, look what we've been through and that they want us to go back to. And I think, and that, in, you know, there's the Russian Revolution, but all over the world, working people are rising up and saying, we need a different way of doing things. And people in Seattle were very, very aware of all that. It wasn't new to them.
And it was a highly politicized atmosphere. It's worth saying that, of course, if you worked in the shipyards, if you worked producing the ships, you were not drafted. And so people from all over the country who were opposed to the war came to Seattle to work in the shipyards to get out of fighting. So you have already a politicized workforce. It's a very, very active community. There's soapboxing. There are people attending union meetings, something that doesn't happen much now. Union meetings are full. Rob, if you can tolerate this, I think you can. One of my all-time favorite pieces of music is a track that you wrote, Street Speech, that has Anna Louise Strong soapboxing. So she's out in front of the Union Register, the Union Record it is, the newspaper of the time. And here's what you have Anna Louise Strong saying to the assembled crowds.
Sweat. We built the pyramids for the pharaohs, and we're building for them yet. Oh, my sister. my brothers, we've been building for these others. I think it's time we kept it for ourselves. We don't want them, we don't need them. These parasites who live off someone else, better turn it around, take another look. Forget what they made you read in your history books. Brick by brick, nail by nail, we built their mansions and we built the jails. Aristotle, noble Plato, these were Greece's glory, we've all read. Philosophic conversation, while the slaves to the land and banks their.
It's workers who make history. It's workers who make things happen. We can run things. And indeed, went out in the general strike in Seattle. And I should mention that inspired by Seattle, Winnipeg general strike, a few weeks later, lasted for 6 weeks with workers running the town, running the city. Rob, what you wrote has a through story. It's not just a series of songs. It tells a story. We heard one of the messages in the Anna Louise Strong street speech. Tell us about the opera and the story.
Well, the story follows a fictional guy, Peter Reinerson, although he's based on people I had talked to in my time doing research for my master's thesis on the strike.
You actually went up to Seattle and spoke with veterans of that strike.
Right. I interviewed 30 or 40 people who had been in town, who had participated in the strike or had observed the strike or who had opposed the strike. That was a really fun project that I did in the late 70s. We follow this guy. He's a Midwest farmer's kid. It's clear that there's not much for him there. He's the youngest son on a farm. He probably is not going to get the farm. And right as the war is breaking out, he takes to the road and meets up with all sorts of people, and he ends up in Seattle to work in the shipyards where he hears this work and meets radical people there and encounters Anna Louise Strong. And like many people at the time, he thinks, wow, this is really a different way of thinking about the world. So Anna Louise Strong, who's an agitator and a reporter for the Union Record, is very very prominent in saying we should be thinking beyond just striking. We should be thinking about taking over. That is, the power in our hands is a great labor curriculum book once said. It follows, then Peter gets involved in the strike. He participates in the strike. After the strike ends, Anna Louise Strong leaves for Russia, as she did, and Peter stays behind to continue to work in the labor movement and to see about how to bring about a new world, which he's had a glimpse of during the strike and which he thinks is the future.
This is actually a nuanced treatment. There are songs also of discouragement, people saying, well, you can't pull it off. Workers can't make a new world all by themselves, or the time isn't right now.
Yeah, we try to be realistic about it. I mean, we try to present the strike as it actually happened, the good side of it, the bad sides of it, how it ended, all these things. We were really interested in not just cheerleading, but reflecting the complexity of the strike and of the labor movement at the time.
We're going to see a reproduction of at least some of that opera here in May, here in Portland in May. May 3rd, May 3rd through 5th is the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association annual conference. Rob will be here, and we'll have local musicians doing some of the performing. That, to me, is exciting, and you've been very gracious in enabling this to happen.
Well, it's so exciting to think of other people, you know, to hear other people's take on how the music might sound and how they see it. It's a way of it going on in the world. So I'm really excited to hear it and to be there to witness it all.
Well, everybody, keep put that on your calendars. May 3rd through 5th, Pacific Northwest Labor History Association annual conference. Every 3 years it comes to Oregon, and this year it will be in Portland. Rob will be here. We'll have some of the songs reproduced, and he'll be doing a narrative to link the songs and tell the story of the Seattle General Strike. One very quick anecdote, Rob, one thing that you remind me of, and that's the Union Record. When people went on strike all across in every profession, barbers, cooks, waitresses, everybody went on strike, the workers in the Union newspaper, which was a daily newspaper with 100,000 subscribers, the workers there said, well, we're going to go on strike too. Every other worker's on strike. And they stopped producing this means of communication. I've always thought that if they had kept it up, the strike could have lasted longer.
Yeah. That's a good theory, Norm. I think it's much debated whether that was a good move. It was, I don't know, morally correct, perhaps, but maybe tactically unwise.
Well, we're going to go out now with another one of the songs. This one you can imagine from the title why I've chosen it. Rob, thanks very much for being with us. We will very much look forward to seeing you and hosting you in May. I appreciate the plug for the curriculum, The Power in Our Hands. I wasn't aware that you knew it. And here we go with The Time Is Now.
Thanks, Norm.
Rumblings in the city, fear across the border, crying in the country, fire across the water. Now, I think the time is now. In some faraway places that you hardly even heard of, there's people doing things that you cannot believe. They're seeing something that they don't want no part of. War opened up the gates and now they're trying to leave. Oh, you wanna hold them fast, but a task or master in the face of the past.
hear what I'm saying.